Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are The Nature of Desire and Gurudeva's Mahavakya, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhinatha Velayatha Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Sitting at the Homa this morning, I realized the Homa dehydrated me. In the spirit of drinking enough water, I realized I should have a glass of water after the Homa. You're supposed to have 8 glasses a day, so if you sit next to a Homa, maybe you need 9. So, as we mentioned last phase, we're working on the editorial for the next issue of Hinduism Today, and we're still a few words short. So, we're going to speak to that need first of all this morning. As you'll recall, it's on the philosophical nature of man that Gurudeva's beautiful concept is that the intrinsic nature of all men is perfect goodness. So if men act in evil ways, it doesn't reflect that they're still good on the inside. There's still a divine being on the inside. It's just that their outer actions are not reflecting their inner divinity. And that the goal isn't to categorize people into categories of good and evil, but rather to encourage everyone to improve their behavior. Whether they're in the good category or the evil category, we can all benefit by further improving our behavior, by further refining ourselves, which is another way of talking about making progress on the spiritual path. So I thought this morning we could look at one of our most popular concepts in past talks, Icha, Kriya, and Jnana. It was backed by popular demand this morning. So we have the Trishulas standing there quite nicely next to Gurudeva's shrine. And as we know, the Trishula is the symbol for Icha Shakti, Kriya Shakti, and Jnana Shakti, the three powers or energies of God Shiva, Icha Shakti, the power of desire or thought, Kriya Shakti, the power of action, and Jnana Shakti, the power of wisdom. So as we've talked about in the past, these powers belong not only to God, but also to each of us. They belong to each soul as well, and we're utilizing them every day. We do so in that we have a desire, and when that desire becomes strong enough, what do? We act on it. If it never gets strong enough, we don't act. But it all starts with the desire, with a thought. I would like a cup of coffee. If that thought gets strong enough, we're going to get a cup of coffee one way or another. So, sometimes, for young souls, the action that's conceived of to fulfill the desire is not a very wise one. So, for example, we see a computer that we want. We want a computer, so what do? We steal it, of course. We want it. We take it. We fulfill our desire, not in a very wise or not in a dharmic way, but it does happen. We want a car, so we take somebody's car. We need some money, so we rob a bank. So we have a strong need, a strong desire, and we're fulfilling it. But of course, we're not fulfilling it in a wise or a dharmic way. We're fulfilling it in a way which is creating karma, creating major reactions. So the soul goes through repetitions of similar experiences called a cycle of experiences. So the cycle of experiences we're talking about here is a very basic one, the cycle of fulfilling our material desires through stealing. So when someone's in this cycle, they won't do it just once. It won't happen once. It doesn't work like that. We're in a cycle. We don't learn the lesson the first time. We don't go ichikriyayana when we're in this state of a young soul. It takes a long time to learn the lesson. It may even take a few lives to learn the lesson. So we're learning. Eventually, the young soul will learn that, you know, there's too many complications involved here when I fulfill my desires for material objects by stealing. I end up in jail, this happens, that happens, other people get hurt. Maybe there's another way here. You know, maybe I have to earn the money and buy it. So eventually that lesson or that jhana dawns on the person. And when that happens, we break out of that cycle of experience, ichikriya, 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 by having jhana. And we move on to a more subtle cycle of behavior. We have improved our behavior through this process of eventually gathering the lesson from the experience. And in this case, it's a lesson about what we shouldn't do. So therefore, the lesson dawns on us that we should try another approach, approach that isn't so adharmic. The same process works for dharmic actions as well, which may not be self-evident. So the example we chose is we're helping out at the local temple with the children's class once a month. We're helping the teachers there teach the class. And we like the feeling it gives us. It gives us a wonderful feeling that we're doing something worthwhile for other people, that we're doing something worthwhile in the realm of religion. So it makes us feel good on the inside. So what do? We learn from that, and we say, well, maybe I should do more of this. This seems to really be rewarding. So instead of just volunteering once a month, we increase the amount we volunteer because we like the reaction that this action has upon us. It makes us feel good. It makes us feel like we're contributing in a worthwhile way. It makes us feel more joyful on the inside. So we up our volunteerism to once a week instead of once a month. And we even volunteer to participate in the committee which works out the classes. So we've increased our activity maybe 6 times or something. And the reaction is a good one. Because we're helping others in a selfless way, in a high-minded way, we feel very good about it. And we're encouraged to do more such things in the future. So we've learned that that kind of behavior gives us a feeling that's really nice, makes us feel joyful and fulfilled, and therefore we're more prone to do those kinds of actions in the future because of the conclusion we came to, because of the wisdom or lesson we learned that this type of behavior is very fulfilling, makes us feel really good. Good morning, everyone. We're very happy to have you all join us for our first annual Gurudeva Mahasamadhi observance. So in thinking about what to say this morning about Gurudeva and Mahasamadhi, came up with the idea of giving a talk on the Mahavakya, one Maha for another. So Mahasamadhi, of course, is a great attainment, and Mahavakya is a great saying, sometimes very short. Short statement of truth. So in Mahavakya, you start with the classical Mahavakya, which come from the Upanishads, which we'll look at first. And we'll turn to our Kailasa Parampara. We have 4 Mahavakya for Chalapaswami and 4 for Yogaswami. And then we created some for Gurudeva. Unofficial, of course. Couldn't reduce it to 4. Gurudeva had more to say than you can put in four Mahavakya. But we have some Mahavakya for Gurudeva, and we'll comment on each of those. But the first ones we'll go through rather quickly, just to not enough time to comment on each of the four sets of Mahavakya. So, the classical ones all come from the Upanishads and emphasize the identity of the soul in God. Read them here, get the lighting a little better. Prajnam Brahma. Pure consciousness is God. Aham Brahmasmi. I am God. That's a very common one. Tattvamasi. Thou art that. I am Atma Brahman. The soul is God. So they're all focusing. Morning, Silkies. Welcome. They're all focusing these four Mahavakyam on the soul and God and the identity of the soul with God, which of course is one of Gurudeva's primary teachings and the teaching of the Parampara as well. So these four classical Mahavakyam from the Upanishads certainly permeate all the teachings of our Parampara. Chalapaswami had Mahavakya, and he not only had them, he would work at them for extended periods of time. The story goes that he would repeat one Mahavakyam for a year or two or three at a time, meditating on it. And there's wonderful references to these four Mahavakyam in many of Yogaswami's Nachintanai. He certainly respected them well and speaks about them and interprets them quite frequently throughout all Nachintanai songs. So you have to excuse my Tamil. This is written in English, so it's even harder to pronounce because I don't know what's long and what's short. So, Orupolapum illai. There is not one wrong thing. So, before I prepare a talk, which I do usually over 2 days, I get half of it ready yesterday and then get up early and get the other half ready. So when I get up early, the first thing I do is I look at Gurudeva's Master Course lesson of the day, see if there's anything that stands out for the talk, because quite often the lesson of the day and life relate in a mystical way. It's amazing. So, I found something. It's talking about what the ignorant see as evil, the enlightened see as the activities of low-minded and immature individuals. So I thought that related very nicely to the idea that there is nothing wrong. There's not one wrong thing. And it struck me in a way I hadn't thought about it before, but if everyone was high-minded, there'd be no one to return your karma to you. We'd all be stuck. We couldn't evolve. We have this karma and no one's going to give it to us. No one's going to hit us. No one's going to speak badly to us. I mean, this karma, we're going to carry it forever, right? We'll never achieve moksha. So we need a mix of people just to work through our karma. So in that sense, you know, you can see it's deliberate. You don't want a world where everybody is kind of perfect because no one will become totally perfect. You need a world with a mixture of people in it. So in that sense, it's destined to be. It's necessary. Otherwise, we wouldn't make spiritual progress. So I'd never quite looked at it that way, that we need a mix of people on earth just to bring back our karma to us, move forward. Pavo Mundinda Karyam. It has been accomplished long ago. So I'm skipping that one. That one is worth a number of minutes, but can't do them all. Nam Aryom. We do not know. That's an important one. So, of course, this is referring to intellectual knowledge when it says we do not know. Normally, when you think of knowledge, you'd think you're trying to acquire a lot of knowledge. But this is distinguishing between the knowledge of the intellect and the knowledge of the superconscious. So when it comes to deeper mystical experiences, when it comes to the experience of God, the intellect doesn't have a clue. We do not know. If the intellect thinks it understands it, that's a barrier to actually experiencing it. So we have to give up the idea that I can figure this out rationally, I can figure this out with my intellect, and that's how I'll come to experience God. It doesn't work that way. We do not know is the emphasis of the parampara. Yoga Swami's famous remark was, in scolding someone, he said, "It's not in books, you fool." Same idea, and of course, Gurudeva's Raja Yoga aphorism is that the intellect is the greatest barrier to the superconscious. So all of that is saying the same thing, that when it comes to religion, when it comes to the experience of God, the intellect can't help us experience God. It can help us do a lot of things. It can help us run a computer. It can help us go shopping. It can help us cook. It can help us calculate. It can help us do many, many things. It's a useful tool. It's not that the intellect isn't good, but it just doesn't have any place when it comes to experiencing God. It can be the barrier. Last but not least, from Chalapa Swami, Muladam Unmai, all is truth. That one repeats in Yoga Swami coming up. Moving on to Yoga Swami, first one, Tanai Ari, know thyself. So this, of course, we've heard Gurudeva say a few times, right? Know thyself, realize the self. Realize the self, yourself. So definitely that's a strong theme of the parampara. Sarvam Sivam Seya, Siva is doing it all, even creating evil. Sarvam Sivamayam, all is Shiva. And Suma Iru, be still. Moving on to Gurudeva, we've grouped them. So our first group, we have five groups if we have time to get through them all. Don't have to. We had six, but I felt for sure we wouldn't get through six groups. So we have five groups. The first group starts appropriately with self-realization. So the Mahavakyam is, the purpose of life is to realize the self. Sound good? Purpose of life is to realize the self. Gurudev goes on to say, the ultimate reason we are here on earth is to realize the timeless, formless, spaceless self-God within. So, in commenting on each of these, I wanted to comment on it in a way which brings out its uniqueness. In other words, in our parampara, you know, everyone's saying the purpose of life is to realize the self. It's not supposed to be a new statement. It's just a key statement. But Gurudeva's uniqueness is the description of the self. The precision of his description of the self is a unique statement. Timeless, formless, spaceless. Sometimes he would add causeless. Timeless, formless, spaceless, causeless. An emptiness which is a fullness. So it helps you get a sense of what it is. Otherwise, if you say realize the self, what is the self? Well, the self, it'll mean something different to each person. Because it's just not a specific term. But when you say, well, we're talking about the absolute, the transcendent, that which is timeless, formless, spaceless, which has no cause, which always is, isn't that wonderful? We have a sense of it. Helps us move toward us, move toward it. Helps us eventually realize it because we have a better sense of what we're trying to experience here. Moving on to the second one in the group. The group again is self-realization. We are in truth the truth we seek. Is the Mahavakya. We are in truth the truth we seek. So the uniqueness is you are already that which you seek. It's not a question of something happening in the future which makes you that. We are, in truth, the truth we seek. So it's distinguishing between becoming and being. Part of us is becoming Shiva, the soul body, is maturing. There's a process here which takes time. We're spiritually evolving. We're becoming, in our soul body, more and more like Shiva. But there's a part of us which is identical with Parashiva, with the self, and always has been and always will be. And it's not a case of becoming. We don't have to wait. We have to go through this, and this, for something to happen. No, it could happen right now. Because we're always the self. We're always Parashiva. It's a question of claiming that identity. So isn't that a unique emphasis? You know, this idea of, no, you're already that. Just realize that which you already are. Ready for group two? Group two, the nature of God. God Shiva is immanent love and transcendent reality. So that's worthy of being called a Mahavakyam. So the uniqueness is, Gurudeva not only speaks of the transcendent reality, but brings us into an understanding of that aspect of God Shiva, which is all pervasive, and he describes it as love, which is very helpful. We can see Shiva as an all-pervasive love that permeates the entirety of creation. It's inside of us, it's outside of us, it's everywhere, yet we can't see it. What a mystery. But someday we will. So understanding it is a second and a distinct aspect of God Shiva, and as having the nature of love, brings forth a new concept, an important concept, to complement that of the transcendent reality, which you can't describe as love, can't describe it as anything. The next Mahavakyam, again on the nature of God, group two, God Shiva is the life of our life. Oh, what a great Mahavakyam. God Shiva is the life of our life. And this has the uniqueness of stepping down the experience of God to something so simple. It's so unique in that sense. All we have to do, as Gurudeva taught us, is look into someone's eyes deeply. Look beyond their external personality. Look beyond their intellect. Look deeply in their eyes and see the life. And you've seen God. Gurudeva says it so beautifully, I want to quote it here. Let me find it. Oh, it's up here. Here we go. Look beyond the individual's personality. Go deeper than his or her intellect and see the pure life energy as Supreme God Shiva himself. That's such a powerful phrase, I wanted to read it. The pure life energy as Supreme God Shiva himself. So everyone can experience God. Isn't it so simple? Who has made it so simple? God is the life of your life. I mean, it's a Tamil word. I mean, it's there. It's not a new concept. But to step it down into this idea of just looking in the eyes, seeing the pure life force as Supreme God Shiva himself, is truly unique. Moving on to group three, the nature of man. Man is not man. Man is God, is the Mahavakyam. So, again, Gurudeva has a unique approach which takes us step by step from wherever we are and moves us forward toward this identity. Lots of times, people have a negative self-concept, and that's where we're starting from. I'm a terrible person. I'm unworthy. Everyone else is better than I am. I'm hopeless. I shouldn't even go to the temple. I might defile it, you know, etc. And we have this negative self-concept. That may be where we're starting from. Well, that's all right. Gurudeva says, okay, well, let's create a positive self-concept and gives us tools for doing so in merging with Shiva. Lots of specific tools to move from a negative self-concept to a positive one, Mahavasana Daha Tantra, flower offerings to parents, positive affirmation, understanding the philosophy, so forth. Lots of great tools there to move forward one step. But he doesn't stop there. Once we have a positive self-concept, we feel, I'm a worthwhile person, I'm contributing. If I go to the temple, that's all right. Then we can move even deeper and identify with our soul. We are a divine being, truly a spiritual being. That's our soul nature. This is who I am. My soul inhabits a physical body, and I have a personality and an intellect, but who I am is the soul. I'm a spiritual being. Okay, but we don't stop there, right? We keep going one more step because the Mahavakyam is, man is not man, man is God. So we haven't got there yet. We're the soul. So then Gurudeva teaches us, well, look at the essence of the soul, which is Parashakti and Parasiva, which is all-pervading consciousness and transcendent reality, and identify with that. And then, man is not man, man is God. Next Mahavakyam on the nature of man, there is no intrinsic evil. Very important. So this is, again, focusing on helping us see each person as a divine being, no matter what they do. A very practical approach to relating to people. No matter how wrong they act, no matter how harmful a person they are, they're still a divine being. The person who does everything right and is helpful and the person who does everything wrong and is harmful are both divine beings. So this is a helpful perspective in terms of relating to other people because it gives us a positive way of interacting with everyone because everyone's on the spiritual path, whether they realize it or not. Some people are on it consciously, and others, most people, are not consciously on the spiritual path. But that doesn't mean they aren't. Everyone is progressing spiritually, and looking at everyone as a divine being is a helpful way of relating to them and helping them move along in their spiritual progress by improving their behavior. That's in our next pub desk. All of those on the island have helped me for a couple of weeks now perfect that talk. It's called Making Spiritual Progress Through Improving Your Behavior. Okay, moving on to group four. A joyful, peaceful life is the topic. So, start with a classic Mahavakyam, I'm all right right now. Isn't that a great one? I mean, it's just so simple, so charming. I'm all right right now. And the story, you know, Gurudeva created it when he was 12 years old or something, going home in the snow, afraid he was going to be late for his favorite radio program, some Green Hornet or something back there, you know. Something like Captain Midnight. Okay, Captain Midnight. That even predated the Green Hornet. This was before television, so... He was afraid he was going to miss his program, and he was worried about the future. But being a mystic, he said, I'm worried about the future. This is ridiculous. Here I am in the present, worried about the future, which is lessening my experience of the present. Isn't that ridiculous? I'm all right right now. Learning how to be content in the present and not worrying about the future. So many people these days are worried about the future. Even Hindu pilgrims who come here are worried, you know, terrorism, this and that, what's going to happen. So it's very important to not worry about the future, but to live happily in the present by feeling I'm all right right now. And Gurudeva calls that the eternity of the moment, which expands beyond that to not think too much about the past. Because that can also be burdensome. not to worry about the future, not to regret the past, but to live happily in the present moment is the goal. And again, Gurudeva gives us tools to learn how to do that. Just doesn't give us the theory, but in merging with Shiva, helps us think less about the past, helps us think, worry less about the future. So that's, I'm all right right now. Of course, when it comes to a joyful, peaceful life, the Mahavakya, life is meant to be lived joyously. I have to put that in there, right? Life is meant to be lived joyously. So, this is important to remember. Because in being strict, in doing our sadhana, in being serious about making spiritual progress, we can get too serious. We can get somber. We can get unpleasant to be around. We're so serious. You know, we never laugh. We never smile. Children run from us, whatever. So this reminds us, you know, we can be strict without being somber, without being unsmiling and not showing happiness. Life is meant to be lived joyously. So it's okay to smile and laugh. In fact, it's important to smile and laugh and to have fun, and particularly you know, in the family, for the family to have fun and be a joyful place, a playful place, and not to get too strict with a lot of rules. We don't want to do that. It needs to be a happy, joyful, playful environment first and foremost, and any rules have to be secondary to that. The last one in this section, a joyful, peaceful life. The Mahavakyam is, for world peace, stop the war in the home. Lots of people talk about world peace. Lots of approaches to world peace. United Nations hopes for world peace. Religious leaders hope for world peace. Some people chant to yagams for world peace. Gurudeva's approach was about as practical as you can get. Okay, let's start in the home. Let's make the home peaceful, one home at a time. Starting in a very down-to-earth, practical way. There's nothing abstract. There are no generalizations. If there's children and spouse abusal in the home, then there's no chance for world peace. We have to eliminate it in the home so that those who live together don't hurt each other. But there's no beating in the home, no punishment of that kind, or no just abuse, which is even worse, taking place. So Gurudeva even, I'll give you the story. It's a nice story. Gurudeva came back from the United, it was after September 11th. Gurudeva was attending a meeting with some island leaders. And everyone was concerned, of course, about terrorism and discussing terrorism and chemical warfare. So Gurudeva said this idea that, well, when it comes to world peace and terrorism, you know, we start at home, and the chemical warfare we're dealing with on this island, of course, is drug abuse. It's a big problem among children. So we need to focus on our drug abuse on the island. That's the way we combat the chemical warfare that's going on. And the terrorism we fight is children being terrorized by their parents, wives being terrorized by the husband. We need to eliminate that on the island to make progress. So again, he brought it right down to the local level. Nothing general about it. The last group, group five, and we're right on schedule, is Hinduism. Hindu solidarity, a unity in diversity. Very important Mahavakya. So it's the idea, and Gurudeva put it into practice for many, many years through Hinduism Today and through attending lots of conferences with Hindu groups, through visiting Hindu swamis, that Hindus need to stand together as a force to be strong. But in standing together as a force, we don't have to give up our differences. All the sectarian differences that we have we can maintain them and still be united just by respecting the fact that we're different. We have differences. We have four major denominations. Each one is distinct from the other. Some, in very, very specific ways, diverge a lot. But despite those differences, we're all Hindus. So we can stand together as a united group and be strong and fight problems that come up in the various countries of the world that Hindus are facing. All the Hindus, like in Malaysia, for example, we work with the Malaysia Hindu Sangham, and they go on that basis of all the Hindus in the country uniting and standing up against problems. For example, there's a Christian fundamentalist conversion problem that they're working with now. And Hindu solidarity, unity and diversity, is a good concept which allows Hindus to band together, set aside their differences, and work for the common good of all Hindus. So that was all the time we had. Otherwise, we would create more Mahavakyam. We had two or three or four more to go, but we knew we couldn't finish on time. We're trying to finish at 7:15. So that's our opening talk on Mahasamadhi and Mahavakyam. Om Namah Shivaya.